BBC Sounds. Music, radio, podcasts.
Hello. Later, the art of the blind baker.
Once it's in the bag, just do the bag up. And there we are. Good to go. So I shall pipe.
And more of your unknown unknowns, which we're very much enjoying, by the way. But one thing that certainly isn't unknown to regular In Touch listeners is that the RNIB is in financial trouble. When we asked the RNIB earlier this year to come and talk to us about their plans for dealing with this shortfall, they said they wouldn't be able to come onto the programme until April. However, when the belief is that blind people's jobs are at stake and services to visually impaired clients are under threat, it's difficult to keep a lid on things.
Thank you for calling RNIB. We want to create a world without barriers where people with sight loss can lead full lives. If you're affected by sight loss, we can help. Please hold the line to speak to one of our helpline advisors.
Well, if our informants are correct, you could find yourself holding on that line for rather longer in the near future. A 45-day consultation process began last month over the RNIB's strategy for sorting out its finances, and we understand that staff have been warned not to talk to journalists about these proposals. But we have been told this anonymously.
The proposal is numbers of colleagues in the advice service, one of the forward-facing services who take calls from customers on a daily basis, will be virtually cut in half. This will be narrowed down into specific specialisms. For example, employment, children's services, technology, welfare, tax and benefits advice. The plan is to communicate more digitally with customers via web chats. But it is unclear at present whether the in-depth work, which is currently undertaken with benefits, will still continue, i.e. challenging decisions via mandatory reconsiderations and representation at tribunals. Other departments, such as the Helpline, who at this point deal with the products Talking Books, Free Will Writing and also Recording Complaints, will also face job cuts. There are other job cuts in our Community Connect staff and wellbeing services. As staff, we do not think the proposed structures will enhance the experience of customers in any way, which is the line that has been mooted by senior management. Instead, it will rather cause a serious reduction in services and positive outcomes for customers. We have been told by management that we can make counter-proposals and that the proposed structure is just that at the moment, proposed. Staff have been traumatised by all of this, to say the least, particularly our colleagues with sight loss. They wonder how they'll get another job if they lose their roles at the RNIB. It gives us the impression that the management of this charity are completely out of touch and don't actually care about their customers and their employees.
Well, strong stuff, which led us to ask again for clarification from the RNIB. Once again, they told us they couldn't put anyone up due to the confidential nature of the proposals, but they did give us this statement.
We launched our new strategy in summer 2024 with ambitious 10-year goals to deliver large-scale social change to make the most impact for blind and partially sighted people. To deliver our new strategy, we recognised that we needed to review our organisation design and ways of working so that we're in the strongest position to achieve our goals and build a strong RNIB for the future. As part of our phased transformation programme, we are now in our organisation-wide consultation. To protect confidentiality and out of respect for the people going through this process, we cannot provide any detailed information at this stage. We are, however, consulting with staff and the unions, listening carefully to feedback, exploring counter-proposals and suitable employment opportunities. This process is about working together to ensure we continue to make the most impact for blind and partially sighted people. We know this is an anxious time for many of our colleagues, and we are making sure we are looking after our people through the process. We remain steadfast in our commitment to our customers, who can continue to reach us via phone, email, and our website. Supporting the best outcomes for blind and partially sighted people always has been and always will be our top priority.
Well, with the staff and management apparently sworn to secrecy, we turned to someone who knows the organisation well and who cares about its reputation. Steve Tyler worked for the RNIB for well over 20 years, ending in senior planning and strategy roles. And he joins me now. Steve, what do you make of the information that we've received and the RNIB statement?
I come in peace. I'm a fan of RNIB. But on this occasion, it feels different. I've got friends and colleagues. There's been a gradual ramping up. And then this particular issue has gone on really since the summer. And so people have had this feeling that it's hanging over them. They don't know what it is. But what I can identify is the fear and frustration and upset in the visually impaired community there. The numbers speak for themselves. The employment rate and indeed the education attainment rate as it stands in the latest sets of reports say for six decades this has not changed. One way or another, at the moment, it's very difficult to get a job if you're visually impaired. So it hits at the heart of you as an individual, of what you stand for, looking after your family. And indeed, there are many other issues normally accompanying visual impairment, not just visual impairment.
The RNIB is in big financial trouble. We know that. Wouldn't almost any solution it could come up with involve cuts?
More and more, we're seeing voluntary sector organisations being driven by very, very commercial decision-making processes. If your measurement is around the bottom line and you begin to focus much more on brand and reach and all of those things, which are very, very home turf to business-oriented clientele and people, you begin to lose sight of the services and the importance of the relationship. It's not the organisation I recognise anymore. The organisation I knew, and it has been part of my life for many years, as it has for many people, has been innovation, delivering services, making sure that we keep up with accessibility challenges, all of that kind of thing. And of course, that is still going on. But it seems to me the expertise is hidden.
The organisation has to make sure it's got the right people in the right jobs. You can't do that just on a percentage basis, can you? We should employ this number of visually impaired people.
At the moment, if you look at the leadership in RNIB, and I'm not talking about trustees here, I'm talking about the senior leadership team. To my knowledge, there are no visually impaired staff at the top table and very few at the next level down. That's concerning. If you don't have people leading the ambition that genuinely can represent the needs and speak on behalf of people with visual impairments, I think that's a real challenge.
Now, the RNIB has a 10-year strategy here with three-year targets. Some of those targets look incredibly ambitious.
Some of the strategy over a two or three-year period, I mean, it seems to me impossible. So if you take rehabilitation services, we've been in the situation we've been in, where there's been a rundown of specialist social services, specialist knowledge, advisory and support for 40 years. I'm not sure how you put that back. However ambitious you are, the way it communicates with its constituency and the relationship has to change.
Well, we hope that the RNIB will come on in April in order to address some of these issues that you've raised. Steve Tyler, thank you very much indeed. Now, for something a little lighter. We've been getting a brilliant response to our item a few weeks ago on unknown unknowns, the things that blind people didn't even know that they were supposed to be doing, either because nobody had told them or because they couldn't learn by copying other people. This one from Nick Adamson.
On a walk in lockdown, I really confused my family when talking about squirrels. With all that talk of them being in trees and so on, I always thought squirrels were birds. They aren't, by the way.
And then we had this from Ian McRae.
My mum used to tell the story of how, in the 1930s, she, as a totally blind child, was taken to Saturday morning pictures. In those days, there would still have been quite a number of silent movies on the bill, or at least much of the humour in cartoons, for example, was entirely visual. She'd recount how one of her sighted sisters would give her a sharp dig in the ribs and hiss in her ear instructions such as clap or laugh.
Well, do keep them coming. And speaking of unknowns, to someone who's never seen whisking, piping and folding, you could be forgiven for thinking that they were just a firm of solicitors. It turns out, though, that they are all terms used in baking. Well, Annie Spooner is registered blind. That hasn't stopped her from indulging her passion for baking cakes. Indeed, so good was the feedback about her baking skills from friends and family that she was inspired to set up her own business called Annie's Cake Creations. Well, when she got in touch with us, we thought the proud mum of two deserved rather more than a half-baked response. Sorry about that. So we sent our reporter, Hetal Bapodra, to visit her.
What are you going to be doing here? Basically, I'm making the cupcakes, so I've got, hundreds to do. And then I'm going to do some buttercream swirls on the top to decorate them with.
Fabulous.
The way I found out was just ridiculous. We had a voucher come through for free eye tests. I hadn't gone for a test in years. So I went over there and it was like a little lit up box in the middle. And she gave me a little clicker and said to click it every time the sides fluttered. So I'm sitting in this chair, my chin's on the little thing. And I'm looking at the little box in the middle and I'm waiting because she's chatting to her colleague. And I'm thinking, a bit rude. But when she's done, I'm sure I'll start it. And then she turned to me and she went, "Are you going to click the button?" She sat me down and was like, "We're just going to refer you to hospital because we think that there might be something wrong with your eyes." Obviously, I'm sitting there like, "No, you're winding me up. Like, surely not." She said, "Have you ever heard of retinitis pigmentosa?" And I was like, "Obviously not. What on earth is that?" And then I remember looking at her and going, "But it's not going to make me go blind or anything, is it?" I literally can just remember her face dropping. I thought, "Oh my God, I'm going to be completely blind. I'm going to have like nothing left. I won't be able to drive. I won't be able to work. I'm going to lose everything." I'm just going to get some cling film out. And then basically, I'm just going to roll it out. Just take the three colours that I did earlier. Just dollop it on, really. The consultant, after loads of tests, sat down with me. And the weird thing that I remember about him was that he kept saying everything twice. "It is retinitis pigmentosa. It is retinitis pigmentosa." And I was like, "Well, was there an echo?" They essentially were like, "There's no cure, there's no treatment, but we're just going to see you every 18 months and you'll have to report to the DVLA for like a yearly reassessment of your sight to determine if it's still safe to drive or not." And then I just remember thinking, this is going to literally close up my life if I can't drive. So I'm just going to do a line of pink and then a line of green and then a little bit of the orange so that I've got three little stripes and then roll it up like a sausage and then just twist the two ends so that it doesn't come out.
Like a sweet.
Yes, exactly like a sweet, yes. My nan on my mum's side was actually a cake maker. My earliest memories of baking was actually her bringing me massive balls of fondant icing to eat, which is like probably the most teeth-rotting thing you could imagine. And then my nan on my dad's side, we always used to make cupcakes together and I absolutely loved it. It would be our thing, like I would go around and be like, "Nan, can we make cupcakes and have spaghetti bolognese for dinner?" She'd be like, "Again?" Like every time, that was what I asked for. So always used to make cakes with her. That's where it kind of come from a little bit. And then I literally just use a pair of scissors to just chop off the end bit. Once it's in the bag, just do the bag up. And there we are, good to go. So I shall pipe. I met my now husband. We started talking about baking and things and he said that he loved brownies. That's the birth of Annie's Cake Creations. That's like where it all started. And then one day I was like, really fancy a cake. Well, actually we were going to his mum's that night. So we took this cake round and we all had a bit of it. And everyone was like, "Oh my God, that's like the most delicious cake I've ever eaten." And I thought, yeah, all right. It looked atrocious. Like it was nice. I did, I enjoyed it. But as for the best cake I've ever had, probably not, I thought they were just being polite. But they were like banging on about it. And I thought, I love baking. I love sweets. I love eating it. I love like making it. So perhaps I could give it a go. I've got some buttercream that I had pre-dyed earlier. I feel like, is it Blue Peter? When they're like, "Here's one I made earlier." When I first started, my issues were like burns and stuff because, for example, if I'm getting something out of the oven, I can see what I'm looking at, but I wouldn't see like maybe the oven door or something like that if it's open. Say there was a glass on the kitchen side. If I'm not looking at it, then I won't see it, so I won't even know it's there. I'm literally going to do I think they call it like a rosette swirl. You put your piping tip into the centre of the cupcake and then you push the end and do kind of like a clockwise swirl. As you're doing it, you move it towards the outside of the cake and you end up with like a rosette in the middle.
So like you start doing consecutive circles.
So I'm doing it now. So one, two. So you only really need like two swirls and that will do the entire cupcake. Walking around with a spatula in my hand is not a good idea because I can't see where the end of the spatula is. And I was like doing something in the kitchen and somehow the spatula had ended up hitting a box of cupcakes. Thankfully it was only a box of six, and the box just literally went kapunk right on the floor. The lid came off, the cupcakes were upside down, there's absolutely no way I could salvage them either. And then I just thought, oh great, so they went straight in the bin and I had to remake them.
The bin? I would have just eaten them.
I'm gonna just leave them in the box because then I don't have to touch them or anything.
That's a good tip. So you already put the cakes in the box?
Yeah, because basically what I was finding was if I decorate them not in the box and then pick them up to put them in, that's just asking for an accident because I'm just so clumsy, so they'll probably end up getting damaged. So I just thought if I put them in the box without the decoration and then decorate them in the box, I haven't even got to touch them then, so then they just literally just stay there like that until the customers come and get them. I had a really stressful week once with loads of cakes. Basically, I painted a cake rose gold. And I remember telling myself, don't knock it, because if you knock it, then you're going to ruin it. Where I was sliding it in, I couldn't see the sort of sides of the box. And then I suddenly realised that the corner had dug into the buttercream and had torn off a big chunk. Oh my God. And I'm like thinking, oh my God, she's going to be here in an hour. So I kind of stuck the chunk back on, got the edible paint back out and kind of had to paint around it to disguise the like line from where I'd put it back on. Where I kind of like know my layout and I know my routine of how I do it. I think you kind of adapt to your own needs. In my mind, I tell myself I'm less hazardous these days.
What is your speciality cake?
Oh, chocolate. It's got to be chocolate. I mean, I'm a chocolate anyway. The recipe that I use for my chocolate cake, do you know what? It's like a Bruce Bogtrotter kind of style. It's really moist. Oh, it's so good. And then when you put a bit of chocolate buttercream with it as well, especially because if there's leftovers, that's definitely coming to me.
That's the chef's prerogative, isn't it?
Yes, exactly, exactly. I had a friend that wanted to become a cake maker and she came round my house. And anyway, she just absorbed it all and was like, oh my God, you should do classes. And especially because I love cakes, I'm passionate about it. I can just do a virtual class, set up the camera in front of me and then literally just make them with the class, talk through everything she thinks, share the tips, as long as I've given them a list of what they need to actually be able to make the cakes with me, then that's all you need, you know, then I can do it. And I've completed my cupcakes. I've done a box of four whilst we've been talking.
That's super. Wow, that's really quick.
Yeah, when it's a little swirl like this, once it's actually getting to the piping stage, I could probably do one box of four in 15 seconds. It's really, really quick.
And Annie Spooner with our reporter Hitalba Podra, who I think must have eaten all the pies because Fern and I haven't seen any of them. Do contact us about your reactions to the RNIB's situation and its plans for dealing with it. Or perhaps you'd just like to tell us about your cooking triumphs. Maybe it's time that we revived a former popular series of ours, Can't See, Will Cook. Email in touch at bbc.co.uk, leave voice messages on 01616 836 16138 or contact us on our website where you can get more information and download tonight's and previous editions of the programme.